Sponsorship of the KQED live audio stream comes from Stanford Continuing Studies. This winter, join Stanford historians James Sheehan and David Kennedy for The Cold War and Its Legacies, exploring the global impact of this pivotal era. Learn more at continuingstudies.stanford.edu.
From KQED in San Francisco, I'm Guy Marzorati in for Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, a new battle over Obamacare. More than 22 million Americans are set to see their premiums more than double when Affordable Care Act subsidies expire on December 31st. But while lawmakers agreed they need to do something, and fast, there's no consensus on a plan. Republicans want to redirect funds into health savings accounts or dismantle the marketplace entirely. Meanwhile, Democrats push to extend the tax credits. We'll break down the proposals and what they mean for you. That's next, after this news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Pentagon watchdog finds Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth violated Pentagon policies when he discussed sensitive operational details on a Signal group chat. The investigation was launched at the request of the chairman and the ranking member of the Senate Armed Services Committee after The Atlantic's Jeffrey Goldberg reported that he was included in a chat about upcoming military strikes in Yemen.
There were two problems with the chat. One, that it was happening in a commercial messaging app. And the second was that they didn't know who they had added into the chat, namely me, and, you know, violating basic rules of good digital hygiene.
Atlantic editor Jeffrey Goldberg speaking with NPR's Morning Edition. We should note, NPR CEO Catherine Marr chairs the board of the Signal Foundation. Hegseth is also under heavy scrutiny over military strikes on boats suspected of carrying drugs from South America to the U.S. Some military lawyers and political leaders have raised concerns that a war crime might have been committed in one such encounter on September 2nd. The Washington Post first reported that Secretary Hegseth gave a spoken order to kill everybody on the boat, and according to unnamed sources, when two survivors were detected, Admiral Frank Mitch Bradley directed another strike to comply with Hegseth's order that no one be left alive. Lawmakers were expected to hold closed-door briefings today with Bradley. The FBI says it has arrested a man suspected of placing pipe bombs near the U.S. Capitol complex ahead of the insurrection at the Capitol nearly 5 years ago, according to three sources familiar with the matter. Here's NPR's Carrie Johnson.
The FBI has spent years searching for the person who put bombs near the Democratic and Republican committee headquarters hours before the assault on the Capitol on January 6, 2021. Now a federal law enforcement source says authorities think they have identified the culprit. FBI agents conducted 1,000 interviews and reviewed nearly 40,000 video files. But the alleged bomber remained elusive for years despite a $500,000 reward. New leaders at the FBI and the Justice Department intensified their focus on the case this year. Carrie Johnson, NPR News.
New York Attorney General Letitia James is challenging the legality of Trump loyalist John Sarcone's appointment as acting U.S. Attorney for Northern New York. A court hearing is scheduled today. James is disputing his authority to oversee a Justice Department investigation into regulatory lawsuits she filed against President Trump and the National Rifle Association. U.S. stocks are mixed this hour. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is down 71 points at 47,811. The S&P has gained 3 points, and the Nasdaq is up 36 points. From Washington, this is NPR News.
Live from KQED News, I'm Brian Watt in San Francisco, where there is a new police chief, Derek Liu. Mayor Daniel Lurie appointed the San Francisco native to the post yesterday, replacing interim police chief Paul Yep. Liu has worked for the department for nearly 20 years, most recently serving as deputy chief. Frank Noto is with the group Stop Crime SF.
He's going to be a community-oriented police chief, interacting and communicating with everybody from neighborhood associations to small merchants groups, and is going to be answerable to the community.
Liu was previously captain of the city's Ingleside station. A 30-day jail sentence for the animal rights activist convicted of trespassing onto a North Bay farm and stealing chickens is set to begin next week. KQED's Dana Cronin reports.
At the sentencing hearing for Zoe Rosenberg on Wednesday afternoon, the judge issued a 90-day hybrid sentence, including 60 days of jail alternatives. She'll also serve 2 years of supervised probation and is forbidden from going near Petaluma Poultry, the farm she broke into in 2023. Rosenberg spoke to hundreds of supporters outside the courthouse before the hearing.
My actions have obviously had consequences for me personally. But it is also true that if I had not acted, 4 little lives wouldn't have been saved.
The Sonoma County District Attorney's Office had asked for a 180-day sentence due to what it called a, quote, staggering lack of remorse. Rosenberg is set to report to custody on December 10th. I'm Dana Cronin, KQED News.
And I'm Brian Watt. More news at kqed.org.
Support comes from European Sleepworks in Berkeley, where research-driven design helps yield sustainable mattress comfort. Learn more at sleepworks.com. Support for NPR comes from Made in Cookware. Made in Cookware is crafted by chefs for use in restaurants and home kitchens around the world. Their cookware can be found at madeincookware.com. And the listeners of KQED. Partly sunny Bay Area today, highs low 50s to the mid-60s. Coastal flood advisory continues through Sunday afternoon for the King Tides.
This is Forum. I'm Guy Marzorati in for Mina Kim. In less than a month, enhanced Obamacare tax credits will expire. These subsidies are used by roughly 22 million Americans who purchase health care on the Affordable Care Act marketplaces like Covered California. The result, according to one estimate, is that health care premiums will more than double on average. There's lots of agreement in Washington that this is a big deal. Here's Missouri Senator Josh Hawley at a Senate hearing yesterday.
If we don't do something on this issue, if Congress does not take action on this issue in the next few weeks, this will be a crisis for 24 million Americans and counting.
But what to do about the looming expiration of these health care tax credits? There seems to be less agreement about that. Joining us to discuss the latest, Jonathan Cohen, senior national correspondent with The Bulwark. He's also the author of a book about the Affordable Care Act called The 10-Year War, Obamacare, and the Unfinished Crusade for Universal Coverage. Jonathan, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Larry Levitt, Executive Vice President for Health Policy at KFF, a nonpartisan health policy research, polling, and news organization. Larry, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Larry, maybe I'll start with you if you could remind us how these Obamacare subsidies work and what would happen at the end of the month if these tax credits expire.
So the Affordable Care Act, when it was originally passed, included subsidies for people to help them buy insurance. These come in the form of refundable tax credits. There was criticism of the ACA from the very start, valid criticism, that even with these tax credits, coverage still wasn't affordable for many people. So in 2021, when Democrats took charge of Congress and the White House, they enhanced the tax credits. In other words, increased the tax credits that people get and extended them to more people. And the way these tax credits work is people are expected to pay a certain percentage of their income towards health insurance, and then the tax credit kicks in the rest. So that varies with the enhanced tax credits from nothing for very low-income people to 8.5% of income for middle-income people with incomes above 4 times the poverty level, which is about $63,000 for a single person.
And so the subsidies are potentially going away. At the same time, I'm seeing the underlying prices of these premiums for plans in the marketplace are going up. Why is that also happening?
That's right. I mean, the average increase for Affordable Care Act plans, what insurers are charging, is going up by 26% on average, which is a lot. Now, some of that is just because healthcare costs are going up. Hospital prices are going up. Drug prices are going up. More people are using drugs like GLP-1s for weight loss. All that pushes healthcare costs up, and that pushes premiums up. But there's something unique going on in the Affordable Care Act marketplace, which is that insurers are expecting that these enhanced enhanced tax credits will expire after this year, and the Congress won't extend them. What they expect will happen is that healthier people will drop out of the market, leaving sicker people with insurance, and that means costs will be higher. I was just going to say but it is important to differentiate between what the insurers are charging and what people pay. As you said, what people will have to pay will more than double on average with these tax credits going away.
Right, based on whether these subsidies expire or not. And Jonathan, what's the latest on Capitol Hill as we kind of barrel towards this deadline?
Well, the latest on Capitol Hill could change from the beginning of my answer to the end of my answer. This is in total flux. You know, Democrats know they want to extend the subsidies. They'd like to extend them indefinitely. They've made clear they'll settle for a year or two or three. I mean, I think the offer they're making now is 3 years, but it's pretty clear they would be okay with, you know, a shorter extension one just to buy some time. Republicans are all over the place. You have Republicans, you played Josh Hawley before. There's a number of Republicans who feel strongly that they don't like government-run healthcare plans is not their thing, and they certainly don't like Obamacare. But, you know, these are their constituents. In fact, they're disproportionately in red districts and red states. So they also are interested in extending these subsidies, probably with some modifications because they have various concerns, and we can go into that. But you have that end of the spectrum. Then you have the other end of the spectrum, which is you have Republicans who will never, there's not a chance in the world they would vote for this. This is against their beliefs of what government should be doing. And again, this is Obamacare, which they've, you know, many of them have spent their political careers trying to repeal. The only thing they'll talk about is some kind of, you know, if there's going to be some extension of this money, it's going to have to involve some major changes in the law itself that, you know, adhere to conservative principles, which generally mean fewer rules to protect people to pre-existing conditions, which does make insurance cheaper, but also makes it more difficult to get and less useful for people with serious medical conditions. So you have that spectrum. And, you know, they are kind of a little bit late to be debating this. Debate has really started just the last few weeks, even though we've all known this was coming. And so they haven't figured out what they want yet. And of course, you know, a lot of them are going to look to President Trump for guidance, but he's been all over the place between his social media posts and what he says on those. We've all seen those gaggles on Air Force One. And, you know, he said, you know, one minute, no, I hate Obamacare. It stinks. We got to blow it up. I'd never do anything to help it. And then the next minute he's like, well, maybe we need to do something about these subsidies because people are going to be hurting, but only with changes. So it's really, you know, it's hard to, you know, at some point, it's not that hard to imagine a negotiation between the Democrats and the Republicans, but that's going to be hard until Republicans really figure out what it is they want as a party, or if there are enough Republicans willing to break with their party and work with Democrats. Because that, I do think, I mean, you can imagine something happening there.
Yeah, and I mean, on the Democratic side, this was the focal point of the fall's government shutdown, right?
It was. This was their key demand, the thing they put up front and center. I mean, it was the one thing they said. And, you know, Democrats are not united on a lot of things, but this they are united. This is, you know, from one end of the party to the other, they want to extend these. And, you know, healthcare is an issue for Democrats. It's in their bones. It's in their DNA. I mean, this has been a cause for the party since Harry Truman. And this was their demand. They said, we want, you know, that's why they shut down the government. In the end, they didn't get their demand. They did get a vote, which we're supposed to get next week in the Senate, at least. The House has not promised a vote. But the Senate majority leader did promise a floor vote on a Democratic proposal. At this moment, the assumption is Democrats will put forth some kind of 2 or 3 year extension, and it will get voted down. It will not have the votes to pass.
And what have we heard? You mentioned President Trump kind of moving around on where he stands on this. What have we heard from the Republican leadership in both the Senate and the House?
Well, it's been a little different. In the Senate, Senator Thune, I think, has been a bit more, you know, again, reading between the lines of their various statements, seems to have, you know, I think hinted that, you know, there's a conversation to be had. Putting together some kind of bill that could pass. And again, he's got a divided caucus, so figuring out what they want to do is one conversation. Speaker Johnson has been very vocally against even having a vote on this, even any kind of extension, which I think probably has a lot to do with the fact that the conservatives in his caucus feel quite strongly about that. There was a moment, again, you know, the president's been all over the place in this, but there was a report, it was a week and a half ago, I think, I may be getting the timing wrong, where word got out the White House was going to propose a compromise, and the terms got out, it was a concrete proposal, and you could see the outlines in it of a beginning of a negotiation that could really get you to a deal. And one of the most remarkable things that happened was there was huge blowback from conservatives in the House. And Speaker Johnson reportedly called President Trump saying, no, 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 we don't want to do this. So he seems at this point to be either for his own beliefs or people in his caucus he is speaking for is a big obstacle to getting something, you know, to having some kind of vote on this.
And Larry, I know KFF has a new survey out today on the political fallout if these tax credits are not extended. What did you all find there?
Yeah, and this was a survey of these ACA marketplace enrollees, so the 24 million people who get coverage through the Affordable Care Act. And it looked at both the political fallout, but also the fallout in some of these people's lives if these enhanced tax credits don't get extended. So, for example, about a third of ACA marketplace enrollees said they would be very likely to shop for a cheaper plan if the enhanced tax credits are not extended. That cheaper plan would likely be what's known as a bronze plan that has a cheaper premium but has a very big deductible, a deductible of over $7,000 per person. And about a quarter of people said they would be very likely to go without insurance entirely. And that's pretty consistent with the Congressional Budget Office estimates. They're the kind of referees in Congress, budget referees. They estimate that almost 4 million people would end up uninsured without the enhanced tax credits. We also looked at, whether people want the tax credits extended. Not surprisingly, these ACA enrollees who are getting the tax credits want them extended, and who they would blame. And, some of it's partisan. Democrats would blame Republicans. Republicans would blame Democrats. But even many Republicans would blame President Trump and Republicans in Congress if they're not extended.
So that's how the blame pie would get divided. And Jonathan, you mentioned, like, underlying all of this, healthcare is one of the few really good issues for Democrats generally, right?
It is. I mean, I always say, healthcare is to the Democrats what crime and immigration is to the Republicans. And that's important in the politics of this, I think, because these debates get very complicated. This is why people, we're so thankful for people like Larry who can translate this all for us. And, you know, if these debates, you know, we'll get into debates about dollar figures and percentages, and it can get very confusing. And, you know, every party will have their own, proposal out there. And I think there's probably a lot of Republicans out there hoping, well, yeah, these subsidies will go away and people's insurance premiums will go up, but we'll get out there and we'll be able to say, well, we tried to propose this alternative and Democrats, you know, didn't pay enough attention to this problem of fraud. And the reality is when these debates get complicated, most people just they kind of tune out and they fall back on their preconceptions. Mm. And, healthcare, even when Democrats are super unpopular, people trust Democrats on healthcare. And I think, and on top of that, the shutdown, this whole debate has been one giant advertisement for Democrats want to extend this, Republicans do not. And I think in that environment, if people are seeing their insurance premiums go up, they're looking for someone to blame, their instinct is going to be to blame the Republicans.
Yeah, especially because this is going to hit right away, right? This is going to take effect, these expired tax credits. That was Jonathan Cohen, senior national correspondent with The Bulwark. He's also the author of a book about the Affordable Care Act called The 10-Year War, Obamacare and the Unfinished Crusade for Universal Coverage. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And as our conversation continues, we want to hear from you. Do you receive health insurance through an ACA marketplace like Covered California? How are you planning for the future? What would make health insurance more affordable for you? What are your concerns? What are your hopes about the current negotiations in Congress? And how important is healthcare to your vote next year in the midterm elections? You can email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org. You can find us at social channels at KQED Forum, or give us a call, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. Stay with us.
Support for KQED comes from Rising Team, creator of Super Manager AI, giving leaders at all levels a leadership personal trainer and coaching partner to help build essential skills, practice hard conversations, and strengthen team performance. Learn more at supermanager.ai. And BART connects writers to holiday events around the Bay, ballet, theater, music, and more with easy tap and ride payment. More information on seasonal events at bart.gov/bartable.
I'm Peter O'Dowd. Russia is throwing cold water on the latest effort to end the war in Ukraine. We'll speak with Russia expert Fiona Hill, who served on the U.S. National Security Council. We'll ask what it's going to take to end that quagmire next time on Here and Now.
The conversation, the latest news, all ahead at 11, Here and Now on KQED News at the top of the hour.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Guy Marzorati in for Mina Kim. We're talking about the debate in Congress over whether to extend tax credits that currently lower health care premiums for millions of Americans on Obamacare. You can join the conversation by emailing your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org. You can find us on Discord, Blue Sky, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We're at KQED Forum. Or you can give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. And joining us now is Representative Sam Liccardo. He represents the 16th District in Congress, which includes San Jose, Palo Alto, and Mountain View. Congressman, thanks so much for joining us.
Great to be with you, Guy.
So you have come up with a plan to extend these Obamacare subsidies. It's called the Fix-It Act. Tell us about that plan.
Yeah, about 3 weeks ago, we worked with some Republican colleagues, and Kevin Kiley and I came out with a plan. And the objective for us when we were designing this was really to satisfy three critical criteria. We needed something that was bipartisan. So we knew we needed to have someone to bring Republicans along. We wanted to extend the Affordable Care Act tax credits to protect 22 million Americans for as long as we possibly could. In this case, it's a two-year extension, which puts us into territory when we hope Democrats might take back the House and have an opportunity to extend it more permanently. And then thirdly, we had to do it in a way that was fiscally responsible. And so we put together a plan that found savings, mostly going after insurance companies that have been overbilling the government for years on Medicare Advantage, and found a lot of savings through reforms there, actually borrowing from a Republican bill on the Senate side. Implementing also some reforms targeting some fraudulent practices from insurance brokers that will also reduce the cost here, and of course extending the tax credits with some income limits. Now the whole point of all this is to find something that's appealing enough to get through a House and a Senate. They're both controlled by Republicans. So far we've got five Democrats, five Republicans on board, but frankly the Republican colleagues I've been talking to, and more than three dozen of them, are telling me, look, we're kind of frozen out until the White House speaks, until we can have some signal from Trump. And so we're going to continue to hustle. But for the most part, you know, we've got pretty broad support. We're hearing from a lot of colleagues on both sides of the aisle.
And as I understand it, your plan would end these health care tax credits for a family of four making around $200,000 a year. Why is that kind of the right cutoff for these subsidies?
Yeah, I don't think there's any magic in the number. We picked a number that was at 600% of the poverty line. I think there's certainly, you know, talking to my own constituents and certainly hearing from public response, there's a reluctance for us to get in the business of subsidizing families who are making $300,000 or $400,000 a year for obvious reasons. We've got a $38 trillion budget debt. We do need to be responsible in how we do this. So obviously we have to limit the cost. And I think it's also important for a lot of Republicans if we're going to get Republican votes.
And Republicans in the Senate have rolled out some of their own plans around Obamacare and around these subsidies. The details differ, but I think in broad strokes, we can say they seem to benefit healthier Americans who may not have a lot of healthcare needs. And I want to get your response to that general line of thinking. Here's Oklahoma Senator Mark Wayne Mullen, who was on Fox Business last month. Oh, we don't have to cut right now, but I can summarize it. Basically, you know, the senator is talking about younger, healthier Americans who may not need as much comprehensive care. I guess in your mind, why shouldn't those folks be allowed to get cheaper health plans that maybe cover less if they need less coverage?
Yeah, I think some folks may be missing the really important part of this debate, which is we really need young, healthy people in the insurance pool to reduce the cost for all of us. The Congressional Budget Office estimated that if we don't extend these tax credits, not only is it going to affect severely those 22 million Americans who are benefiting from them directly, that because they're seeing their premiums more than double, but the rest of us are going to be paying 5% more on our premiums just by virtue of the fact that millions of those folks will be pushed out of insurance pools, that is healthy younger people getting pushed out of insurance pools, and that makes the pool as a whole much more expensive. And so insurance works when you have people who are both high risk and low risk in the same pool. If you're pushing the low risk folks out, I support HSAs and a lot of other programs, but if you're doing it with the objective of pushing folks out, then everybody is going to be paying more who's in the insurance pool.
And as you've been working on this legislation, what are you hearing from your constituents on this, especially those who, you know, may right now be shopping for health care on our state's Obamacare marketplace covered California?
It's no secret that there are millions of families in this country that are struggling mightily to pay bills. We have 24,000 constituents in my district alone who depend on these tax credits directly. And what I'm hearing from them is, hey, we're having to make really hard choices right now between whether we're going to have health care or not, and whether or not I'm going to be able to afford some other important necessities, like whether or not I'm going to be able to take all the credits I need in school, or whether or not I'm going to be able to get my kids the clothing they need this year. You know, those are tough decisions for families. Healthcare consumes a huge and growing part of the budget. And if this is a president who ran on a platform of reducing costs, he's not doing a very good job of it by ignoring this issue.
Yeah, there's also, you know, the healthcare politics of this, right? Like, these tax credits, they lower premiums. They're very popular among voters. I think President Trump's own pollster has said there's a huge risk for Republicans in letting these subsidies expire heading into the midterm election next year. I guess, is there any part of you that thinks, you know what, let's just sit back and let Republicans pay the political price for this next November?
You could say I've heard that on a few occasions out here on Capitol Hill. But you know, the problem is, you know, we can't treat 22 million Americans as collateral damage in this political war. These are folks who are suffering mightily already from tariffs that are driving up food costs and all the impacts of immigration enforcement on our communities. And that definitely affects our food costs as well, along with other things. We've got a lot of folks suffering, and we've got to at least address the pain. We'll have plenty of time to run on these political issues next November.
And we have some comments coming in from listeners. Ted writes, is the current congressional debate the result of the government shutdown? Did Democrats shut down the government to no gain? What would you respond to that? Do you feel like where we are now in this debate, did it make the shutdown worth it? How do you kind of weigh that?
I would say TBD. Look, we went through 43 days of pain, and a lot of folks suffered through all of that. I'm hoping that by the end of all this, we're going to come to our senses and see the imperative of protecting the health care of tens of millions of Americans. If we don't do that, I can understand why cynics might say it was all for naught.
And looking ahead in the next few weeks, how do you see the path forward for the bill that you're working on to extend these subsidies? Have you heard anything from the Speaker, Mike Johnson, any willingness from him to maybe put it up for a vote?
Yeah, we haven't seen any indication from the Speaker. The question really is, are we going to find enough Republicans who will overcome the wobbly knees to sign a discharge petition essentially to go around the Speaker? And again, we're having these quiet conversations. I'm having them on the phone and at the gym and anywhere else I can find a Republican to talk to. You know, there are positive indications, but I think really the White House is critical here. Donald Trump to indicate in some way or another that he'll allow a vote would be helpful enormously. And if that doesn't happen, then obviously we know who to blame. But I much rather get into the passing legislation game than the blame game. It's much more productive.
Congressman Sam Liccardo, he represents California's 16th district in the U.S. House of Representatives. Congressman, thanks as always for your time.
Great to be with you, Guy.
And we're talking about the debate over healthcare funding, and we hope you can join us in this conversation. We want to hear from you. If you receive health insurance through the ACA Marketplace or Covered California, how are you planning for the future? What would make health insurance more affordable for you? And what are your concerns and hopes about the current negotiations in Congress? You can email your comments and questions to forum at kqed.org. You can find us on social channels at KQED Forum, or give us a call now. Our phone lines are open, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. And with us is Larry Levitt, Executive Vice President for Health Policy at KFF, which is a nonpartisan health policy research, polling, and news organization. And Larry, what did you make of what you heard from Congressman Liccardo and how Democrats are trying to put together plans on this issue?
Well, the Democrats have been unified on this issue. Democrats to a person in Congress want to extend the ACA tax credits. Republicans have had a much tougher job. I mean, there are many Republicans who don't want to have anything to do with the ACA, don't want to have anything to do with these tax credits, as Jonathan said earlier. But there are definitely Republicans who want to engage. The leadership has not, and President Trump has not. Over almost 6 in 10 ACA enrollees are in districts represented by Republicans. About 3/4 of ACA enrollees are in states that President Trump won. Many Republican constituents would get hurt if these enhanced tax credits aren't extended, but no Republicans voted for these tax credits to begin with. No Republicans supported the ACA originally. So kind of voting to support Obamacare is a tough vote for them.
And let's go to the phones. We have a call from Rob in San Francisco. Rob, good morning, and thanks for calling into Forum.
Thanks. Yes, my wife and I have ACA plans, and, it's a godsend because the fact that our health insurance, if you look at what the bill is compared to what we actually pay, it's quite significant in how much of a tax credit we get. That's the problem, is that the ACA did nothing to control costs, really. And that's where you got to go after this, because, the health insurance industry is its own lobbyist. The pharmaceutical companies are their own lobbyists. Hospital groups. You've got all these people that lobby Congress to keep the system in place, and we pay the highest cost for the, not the least amount of care, but, if you go anywhere else in the world, you're getting a much better deal, and it's affordable, and you don't have to rack your brain every year trying to figure out how you're going to pay for it. And if they can get the lobbyists out of it and actually control the costs of healthcare, I think that it would make the ACA unnecessary. And I know that going after making Medicare for All part of our health care has been a heavy lift, but I think if we can get this 3-year extension of the tax credits extended and really work on health care and throw the lobbyists out of Washington, I mean, we can throw them all out for all I would love to see. But that's where you got to go after this. This ACA extended tax credits is just a Band-Aid. You've got to fix the problem at its core, which is why is health insurance and health care in the United States more expensive than anywhere else in the world? That's the big ticket item that nobody wants to deal with.
Yeah, thank you so much, Rob, for that call. And Larry, I think we hear this a lot from folks all across the political spectrum, that the real issue is skyrocketing premiums that have kind of been covered up with these subsidies. What would you say to that? And then why have underlying premiums increased so much?
Absolutely. And, I've been on Forum many times and talking about these healthcare issues, and we hear that from listeners every time. And it's absolutely right that healthcare is very expensive in this country. We pay double on average per person compared to other high income countries. We actually have worse outcomes, and we don't even cover everyone, unlike these other countries. But it really is a systemic issue of high healthcare costs. It's not an issue about the Affordable Care Act plans. The premiums for the ACA plans are actually very similar to the premiums for employer plans. Most of us get health insurance through an employer and are fortunate to do so. The thing is, when we get insurance through an employer, we're not seeing the whole premium. The employer is generally paying, you know, at least three quarters of the premium. We're just seeing a small percentage of it. These people who are buying ACA plans on their own are seeing the whole premium. You know, your eyes pop out of your heads when you see how much health insurance costs. Absolutely, we need to do more to try to figure out how to get healthcare costs down in general, and that would bring these premiums down as well.
We have a comment from and a question from Noel on Discord, who writes, wasn't there a Republican proposal for health savings accounts to make up for the difference for higher premiums? Of course, this isn't adequate, but it makes it look like they are doing something. And Larry, I'm wondering if you kind of unpacked the Republican side of this, the plans that they're proposing to change these Obamacare subsidies.
Sure. And there are a couple different proposals. One is from Senator Cassidy from Louisiana. And what he has proposed is getting rid of the enhanced tax credits and instead depositing that amount into a health savings account for people if they enroll in the lowest tier plan in the marketplace, and that would be a bronze plan with a deductible of over $7,000. A health savings account would certainly help people pay for their out-of-pocket costs, pay for their deductible, though it wouldn't cover the whole deductible. But I think as we were talking about earlier, this would tend to benefit healthier people, people who don't need a lot of health care. They could cover some of their costs through that health savings account, carry it over to the next year. For someone who's sick, they may not be able to afford insurance to begin with, and even if they could, that health savings account isn't going to help them a lot. There are even kind of bigger proposals from others, including Senator Scott from Florida, and what he proposes is to allow states to really kind of upend the Affordable Care Act entirely, let them waive the insurance regulations that require certain benefits, get rid of the premium tax credits altogether and put them into health savings accounts, and let people buy coverage outside of the ACA that doesn't cover pre-existing conditions. That, you know, getting back to what Congressman Carter was talking about, that would, you know, segregate the risk pool. Healthy people could buy cheaper insurance. That would leave sicker people covered in ACA plans and result in what we call a premium death spiral, leaving it very unstable.
And President Trump has given some support to these ideas of health savings accounts. And he said he wants it because he doesn't want money going to insurance companies. He wants it to go to Americans directly. Is that happening right now, money going to insurance companies?
It isn't. I mean, these tax credits are for individuals. They go to individuals to help them pay their premiums. Now, as an administrative matter, these tax credits are available to people up front on an advance basis, which is really necessary. I mean, most people couldn't afford to pay a premium and then wait till they file their taxes the next year to get their tax credit. So they get an advance tax credit to help them pay their premium when they owe it. That advance tax credit does get sent to the insurance company, and then the insurance company bills people for the rest of the premium. But it's not a subsidy to the insurance company. It's a subsidy to the individual to help them pay their premium.
Let's take one more call before we head into break. Let's go to Nitin in San Jose.
Hi, this is Nitin from San Jose. Let's face it, in California, especially in Silicon Valley, we are all mostly Republican for fiscal reasons, but socially we are Democratic. But lately, all these fiscal policies of Republicans, especially President Trump, is borderline upsetting me, and I'm really disappointed. So next time, I'm going to definitely vote Democratic.
Nitin, thanks so much for sharing your perspective on this. Larry, have we seen any movement among folks who might, you know, have voted Republican in the past or Republican leaning as this issue's kind of evolved?
Well, I think as Jonathan talked about earlier, when you're talking about healthcare, you know, people trust Democrats more on healthcare, and that's been true for a long time. We saw that, for example, in the midterm election in 2018, after Republicans tried to repeal the ACA, there was a huge sweep for Democrats as a result. But the caller, you know, brought up fiscal issues. Those are real too. I mean, these tax credits have to be paid for.
Yes. We're coming up on a break, but we're going to continue our conversation about these Obamacare subsidies when we come back. Stay with us. Coming up tomorrow on Forum with Mina Kim, when writer Patricia Lockwood fell ill with COVID in March 2020, she experienced feeling insane for months, calling her symptoms Brian fog, not brain fog, and also the refrains, because a single song lyric would play over and over in her mind. So she decided to, quote, write a masterpiece about being confused. Her new novel is called Will There Ever Be Another You? Lockwood joins us to share how she grappled with losing her sense of self and how she found humor and absurdity in illness. For past Forum shows, go to Spotify or Apple or wherever you get your podcasts. Just search for KQED Forum. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Guy Marzorati in for Mina Kim. We're talking about the negotiations on Capitol Hill over whether to extend subsidies that lower healthcare premiums for Americans on Obamacare. Those tax credits expire at the end of the year. And we're joined by Larry Levitt, Executive Vice President for Health Policy at KFF, a nonpartisan health policy research, polling, and news organization. And we love to hear from you. In this conversation, do you receive health insurance through the ACA marketplace, through Covered California? How are you planning for the future? And how is this issue going to weigh into your vote in next year's midterm elections? You can email your comments and questions to forum@kqed.org, or you can find us on social channels at KQED Forum, or give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. And Larry, we know this open enrollment, it's going underway right now. For folks who are kind of navigating a marketplace like Covered California, what's the actual deadline to pick coverage that will take effect January 1st? And could that deadline move as these talks go forward?
Yeah, so the deadline for coverage January 1st is December 15th. So that's really coming up. I have a lot of sympathy for people trying to figure out what to do at this point as their premium's going up, but they know they need health insurance. I mean, one thing I would say is I think these negotiations are going to keep going on. The tax credits may not be extended by the end of the year. It might happen in January. It, of course, might not happen at all. But when people are thinking about their health insurance decision, you can always drop your insurance. One hopes you won't or won't have to, but you can't come back in later on. So, erring on the side of trying to keep that coverage at least through the beginning of the year, you're not committing to a whole year's of premiums. You're committing to month to month, and that at least leaves your options open.
Let's go back to the phones. Patrick in Monterey. Patrick, thanks so much for calling into Forum.
Hi, how are you there? Yeah, I'm a 60-year-old self-employed man, and my new premium next year will be about $780 a month for a high-deductible plan. And my fear is that without ACA, no one will insure a guy like me. So the Republicans plan to, at least part of them, to defund the whole program is short-sighted from the fact that so many self-employed people propel this economy. So I'm interested to see, what's going to happen with that. That's the scariest part for me. I don't mind the $1,780, but that is the scariest part for me.
Totally. No, that's a real concern, Patrick, and I appreciate you taking the time to call in. Larry, we have a couple questions related to this about the individual mandate that used to exist for this program and kind of the balance between healthier and younger and older and Americans with more healthcare challenges. Alex writes, my understanding is that the individual mandate was intended to make healthcare premiums more affordable by increasing the volume of people paying into the healthcare marketplace. We have another question that wonders, is the ACA, you know, is the individual mandate, when that went away, when people were not forced to get healthcare coverage, did that lead to this kind of crisis that we're in right now, where folks like Patrick are wondering what coverage will look like for older Americans?
Yeah, so the original ACA did include this individual mandate with a penalty if you didn't have insurance. That was repealed by Republicans, and there was frankly a fear that it would lead to a lot of healthy people dropping insurance and premiums going up. That largely didn't happen, mainly because of these premium tax credits. So there's, you know, the ACA had a stick, the individual mandate, and a carrot, the premium tax credits. And the carrot ends up being more powerful, especially with the enhancements. And now California has its own individual mandate, and that has certainly helped keep things stable as well. Having healthy people and sick people in the same pool is really important. And we know that, you know, I may be healthy today, but I may end up with a pre-existing condition tomorrow. So it really provides that stability and security for people over time.
And, you know, this whole debate over ACA funding comes just months after Republicans, President Trump, passed a major bill with big cuts to Medicaid, the insurance program for lower income Americans, folks with disabilities. How would you kind of compare the politics here, the politics of this Affordable Care Act debate to those Medicaid cuts?
Well, I think there are some similarities. So, for example, the big Medicaid cuts, almost $1 trillion over 10 years, are expected to result in 10 million more people uninsured. If these enhanced tax credits expire, that would add another 4 million people uninsured. That would wipe out most of the gains in coverage that we saw through the Affordable Care Act. And that would put hospitals, particularly rural hospitals that are operating on edge, in serious trouble, both the cuts as well as having fewer paying patients because they're uninsured. I think a big difference is these Affordable Care Act changes will hit earlier. They will hit starting January 1st, so are likely to be a very big issue in the midterm election. The Medicaid cuts were more backloaded, so they're gonna roll out over time, and the effects won't be felt immediately.
And are there geographic differences in like which parts of the country are going to be hit more by this subsidy cliff than the Medicaid cuts?
Yeah, so disproportionately, ACA enrollees are in Republican areas of the country, and that's in part because red states have not expanded Medicaid as much as blue states, and particularly red states in the South. There are also big differences in how much health insurance costs. I mean, even within California, health insurance is much more expensive in the Bay Area than it is in much of Southern California. So
why is that?
Well, it has to do with the underlying cost of healthcare. I mean, hospitals have gotten very consolidated in the Bay Area, with a couple systems really, really dominating, and that gives them the power to increase prices.
Let's continue our discussion of the politics of all this and go to Laura, who is in Berkeley. Laura, thanks for calling into Forum.
Hi, I have a question. It seems to me that the big mistake Obama made was not pushing for universal health care and then letting the Republicans push Romney Care, which is really Obamacare, and then call it a win. And then, you know, the Republicans decided they had to be against anything Obama did, which really painted them in a corner. And I just wonder if reminding the Republicans at all of this, that this is actually Romney Care, or even having Trump rebrand it, like, is there any way we can call them back to like, hey, Democrats want universal coverage. This was the compromise. you know, call it yours and call it a win. And so I'm curious from the guest if he agrees with that assessment and if you think that would be useful at all heading forward.
Yeah, thank you, Laura. Larry, what do you think of that assessment?
Yeah, I mean, the ACA or Obamacare was very much a political compromise. I mean, the roots, as she said, came from Governor Romney in Massachusetts. You know, it's a system built on private insurance. It's very much a market-based system, which is the kind of thing Republicans typically support. I mean, you get these tax credits, you choose from a variety of insurance plans in the ACA marketplace. It is not, you know, a single-payer system, Medicare for all. It didn't take on healthcare costs by regulating drug prices and hospital prices like most of the rest of the world does. So the ACA to begin with was a compromise. I think there are certainly people who would say, well, let's just scrap it entirely and not move to health savings accounts, but move to more of a Medicare for all kind of system.
The trajectory of this is also just wild, right? Like, if you were to rip Van Winkle today from 2010, this was an issue that haunted Democrats in the midterms in 2010 and in 2014 to some extent. When did Obamacare become popular? Like, is there a point we can point to in time when that happened?
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. The midterms after the ACA passed were terrible for Democrats, and there was a real backlash against the ACA. It started to become popular, frankly, in 2017 when Republicans tried to repeal it. That's when the ACA really turned the corner, and it's just gotten increasingly popular since then as more and more people benefit from it.
Francis writes, I know Republicans are against government-funded health care, and yet they get all the best of the best government-funded health care for themselves and families. Could you please describe the tax-funded health care that members of Congress get?
Well, interestingly, members of Congress get ACA coverage. they get their coverage in the ACA marketplace. Now, they're not getting tax credits. They're getting a government contribution to help them pay their premium, but they are getting these same plans.
Yeah. I mean, on the Republican side, you mentioned that they lost the House in 2018 after that attempt to repeal Obamacare. President Trump famously in the course of the campaign last year said he only had concepts of a plan on healthcare. Why have Republicans had such a hard time kind of formulating a healthcare plan?
I think the difficulty for Republicans is that their priorities, which are certainly legitimate priorities, are, lowering federal spending, lowering taxes, reducing government regulation. Those are worthy goals, but they have trade-offs. If you reduce federal spending, if you reduce regulation, in healthcare, it means less protection for patients, and less affordability. That's what I think makes it very difficult for Republicans to try to come up with an ACA replacement, because what they're aiming to do is just very different from what the ACA aims to do.
Let's go back to the phones, back to Berkeley. Faye, thanks for calling into Forum.
Hi there. Listen, let's be honest. Our healthcare system is a disaster. We have the worst of any westernized nation and the highest costs. There is something very wrong with that picture. And I like your first, I think it was your first caller, male, I don't know his name, but who talked about getting at the problems at the root of the problems. No one is brave enough to do that, sadly. And it is what we need, is that bravery to look at what is the problem. The costs are exorbitant. Why aren't we looking at other countries who do have models? I've read about them, who have had people go in and experience healthcare in these different countries, experience the quality of care, the costs, and many other countries have come out way on top. Why aren't we figuring out what they're doing and trying to understand that? And one more thing, last point, is consumers are very unhappy with our healthcare system as it is. We don't have health care. We don't even have a system. No one's taking care of us, okay? Let's be real about that. It's a medical industrial complex that needs to be fixed. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Faye. Really appreciate your call. You're listening to Forum. I'm Guy Marzorati in for Mina Kim. And Larry, yeah, maybe let's pick up on that. Faye brings up this issue of the underlying cost of healthcare. If, what, 20-plus million Americans get health coverage through Obamacare, more than five times are getting their care through an employer. Those premiums and deductibles, like you mentioned, those are also going up. Is there any conversation that you've heard in Congress or at the federal level to kind of stop those cost increases?
You know, that conversation really has not been happening. We may see it in the campaign in 2026 and in the presidential campaign in 2028. But it's, you know, I think consumers and patients are frustrated all around about healthcare, as the caller suggested. I mean, it's certainly the cost, and as we talked about, we pay double what other countries pay, but it's also just the complexity and everyday frustrations in the system. You know, not being able to get an appointment, having to get prior authorization from your insurance company, and having it be not denied, and trying to get your doctor to appeal that. You know, dealing with phone calls and even faxes back and forth. I mean, these are the things that frustrate people, and it's not the debate that's happening right now in Congress.
A listener writes in, even if you're making $200,000 a year, insurance is still too expensive. Even without the removal of the subsidies, my insurance went up from $1,800 a month to $2,300 just for myself, and that's with an 80-20 plan. I could not afford paying over $4,000 a month. And we have a comment and question from Rishi on Discord, who asks, can you explain the difference between the basic versus the enhanced subsidies in Obamacare? Rishi said he's heard the argument that we're keeping the basic subsidies and cutting only the enhanced, so it's a marginal 10% problem in terms of costs or number of people affected. Is that a fair summation, Larry? What would you say to that?
It is. Even if these enhanced subsidies or tax credits are not extended, the underlying or basic subsidies in the ACA would stay. But what people would have to pay out of pocket would still increase a lot. Again, you know, roughly would double, or about an extra $1,000 on average. So, you know, even though those underlying subsidies would remain in place, people would still see big out-of-pocket cost increases.
Let's get one more call in before the end of the hour and go to Raza in San Carlos. Thanks for calling in.
Yes, hello. So I just wanted to make a comment that healthcare and market economy are oxymorons. It doesn't work. Healthcare is not a market economy-based commodity. When we have patient bill of rights, hospitals have to treat uninsured people, and they have to recover that cost from somewhere. Compared to other countries, no country has 30 million people uninsured. So the cost will be spread out over the people who can pay. So the basic point is government has to get involved. Taxpayers have to pay. We all have to pay towards it together. Otherwise, we'll have dead people sit on our porches. And we don't want, as a society, to live in a society where people are dying on the streets, which is happening in third world countries. But we don't want that. So my point is healthcare and market economy in the presence of patient bill of rights are incompatible.
Thank you, Raza, so much for calling in. Appreciate your point. Larry, we got about a minute left before we wrap up. I'm wondering what you're going to be watching as this debate moves ahead in Congress towards the end of the year, both on these Obamacare subsidies and on the overall ACA system itself. How are you watching for this to evolve?
Yeah, so, you know, we will see at least one vote, maybe several votes in the Senate next week. I don't expect those to go anywhere. So the question is, you know, are there, you know, is there enough bipartisan consensus, you know, along with efforts by Congressman McCardo to, you know, to get this over the finish line, but before the end of the year? And then, you know, what happens with ACA enrollment? I mean, people are making decisions right now about whether they can afford these premiums. So, you know, how many people will we see dropping out of the market and ending up uninsured?
Yeah. I mean, Congress loves pressing up against a deadline. Is there any other, like, future deadline that, could be impactful coming up next year? I know there's another looming government funding one.
Yeah, I mean, the government, short-term government funding, ends at the end of January, and that would probably be the next opportunity to try to extend these tax credits. I think they would be retroactive if they do get extended, but we could still have seen millions of people, drop out of the market, before then.
Larry Levitt, Executive Vice President for Health Policy at KFF, a nonpartisan health policy research, polling, and news organization. Larry, thanks so much for your time today.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to all of my guests this hour, and thanks to all of you, our listeners. I'm Guy Marzorati, in for Mina Kim, and you've been listening to Forum.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the Generosity Foundation and the members of KQED.
Just ahead of Here and Now, let's take a moment and check in again with Elaine Leung. A look at traffic starting in Fremont.
That's right, Dave. It's a crash south 680 before Washington Boulevard. Four cars involved. The second lane from the left affected. And we're watching the traffic back up now from Vargas Road. San Francisco slows north 101 north of 280 to about Hospital Curve and northbound 19th Avenue. A reminder, we do have that road work set up from Vicente to Noriega in the right lane. Elaine Leung for KQED.
Traffic support comes from Rush Creek Lodge and Spa Yosemite. Support for KQED comes from Xfinity, delivering smart Wi-Fi, mobile, home security, and entertainment to help power a seamlessly connected life. Learn more at Xfinity.com. Xfinity, imagine that. Thank you for listening, and thank you for your continued support. It's KQED 88.5 San Francisco, KQAI North Highlands, Sacramento, and we're also